You're listening to Into It. I'm Daniel Welsh, and I'm with Rachel McGraw and Ash Percival, as always. This week, we're discussing Star Wars romances, picking apart Madonna's latest Instagram beef, and reflecting on an important anniversary in British music. But before all that, I want to talk to you about Emmerdale.
Always good.
Always a good start of the week. Well, actually, no, it's not. Because they've had a lot of complaints this week about a rape scene that aired between a newly married couple on Emmerdale on Monday night. So that sparked a lot of debate among viewers about whether it had crossed a line about what was appropriate pre-Watershed. So the actress involved, who plays the victim of the attack, has said that they deliberately intended not to half tell the story and really shine a light on like the horrors of sexual assault and all that business. But that hasn't stopped more than 60 people complaining to Ofcom that the scene broke their guidelines. So Emmerdale goes out between 7 and 7:30. What I want to ask you is, do you think that that was too much before the Watershed? And is the Watershed actually outdated in a time when you can go online and watch anything?
This kind of reminded me of when EastEnders did the Linda Carter rape scene. And there was a lot of stuff around that at the same time with people complaining. And I remember when I went to a press event for that, the guy, Dominic Treadwell Collins, who's producer at EastEnders, actually explained, because I never really understood what the actual rules were. But basically, with the Watershed, the idea is that if a child walked into the living room and saw this happening on telly, it shouldn't be totally clear to them what is happening.
Okay.
So they should see it, and you'd obviously see this kind of thing between two people and two characters. Yeah, but maybe not interpret it to the level of like he's raping her.
It shouldn't be
that obvious. So with that in mind, I don't see that Emmerdale did anything wrong, really. Like you were left in no doubt that that was what was happening, but it wasn't made that explicitly clear, like it would be on something like Game of Thrones.
So I haven't seen the Emmerdale scene. I don't watch Emmerdale. But I do think the notion of the Watershed is kind of getting... We live in an age of like on-demand TV. And yes, there's always going to be people that are watching live television. But I kind of think so much out there is accessible on the internet now. And what people are actually complaining about is actually, it's mostly important stuff that they're complaining about. You know, people get up in arms over the dogs getting swapped on Britain's Got Talent, which, yeah, you can argue that they might have a point. But the stories that, you know, the soaps are telling with those kind of storylines, they're really important. Like, people need to learn about them. People need to know about them. And, yeah, if that means that you have to have a conversation with your child about the importance of not sexually assaulting someone, then that means you have to have that conversation.
I think... What's interesting is that you said the actual rules of the Watershed, Rachel, and I didn't realise that it was quite so much focus on children. I know that obviously that's who we're protecting by putting things on, allegedly protecting, putting things on at a certain time. But also it's not just children who are going to be affected by this. So, you know, a kid might not necessarily know what's going on screen, but somebody who's quite sensitive, even if they're like a full-grown adult, they might still be quite affected by it. And I think that's probably something to keep in mind as well.
I think so. And the other thing is with this one, so Ian McLeod, the Emmerdale executive producer, spoke out.
I always think it's McLeod.
I've met him, but I don't actually know how you say it. Anyway, Ian.
You just call him our Ian.
I'm just going to do first name terms now. Ian has said that the episode was kind of bookended with like warnings, and you know, people who tuned in at the start knew what they were going to see. Also with this storyline, this wasn't like a one-off attack. We have seen like Pierce, the male character, like force himself on his wife before. This is something that's kind of been ongoing.
And there's a lot of emotional abuse as well, isn't there?
Yeah, this isn't something that they kind of sprung out of nowhere with no warning. You know, you sat down to watch Emmerdale with your tea. If you're someone like following it, you knew that, which most soap viewers kind of do, you knew that this was going to happen. It was even teased in the spoilers. We knew this episode was coming. It didn't blindside people.
And also there was a warning before the episode aired as well, wasn't there? You know, the narrator, the announcer, whoever did say, be warned that there's the scenes that a lot of people could find offensive. But what I want to ask you as well is the Watershed an outdated thing? Because obviously, Ash, you mentioned now we can go online and we can see a lot of really bad things. Is it time to just go, you know what, people are probably going to see this stuff regardless, should we just pull it?
Well, you know, you can go on BBC iPlayer, ITV Player and Netflix, and you can have access to those shows at any time of day, and all you have to do is click a box to say, yeah, I'm 16 or over. I know you can set up parental controls and guidance and all that kind of stuff, but if kids have access to this kind of stuff on their phones, on their tablets, which quite often they do, you know, the Watershed isn't protecting them at that point. So I kind of think, well, why have we just got it for live broadcasts?
Yeah, but what I will say is, let's think back 15 years when there was, well, there was the internet, but there wasn't, you know, streaming, and there wasn't things readily available as they are now. I was a kid and I was not allowed to watch, for example, Graham Norton's talk show. But, you know, I'd be sent to bed at 9 and come 10 o'clock, the TV in my room would go on just the same. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so the watershed was there. You know, it's not like this is a new thing. People being, you know, people are always going to, kids are always going to find ways to look at things like that. So I think maybe, I think it probably is a, I think it is worth keeping the watershed because it is protecting young people from certain things. And
I guess it's
not a foolproof thing, but then nothing's foolproof.
I guess
it?
It's what you're protecting them from, isn't it? Like, you know, if you're protecting them from swearing and scenes of a sexual nature and all that kind of stuff, then okay, fair play. But I don't kind of see the need to protect them from, I don't know, we saw the Coronation Street storyline a couple of months ago with Todd and, I can't remember the other character's name.
Oh, Todd and Billy.
Todd and Billy, yeah. I think that was it. And that got Ofcom complaints because they claimed that the implied sex between those two characters was too explicit. And it's like, well, no, just because it's two men, like, we shouldn't be protecting children from that.
Also, that wasn't even implied sex. They just had to roll around on a bed and then they were interrupted and had to stop. That was why I complained to Ofcom. I wanted full frontal, goddammit. I was left shortchanged. It's interesting, though, Ash, you've just said, like, protecting kids from swearing and like, sexual scenes. I feel the complete opposite. Like, I swear it, I don't care about sex. I guess, you know, kids probably shouldn't be watching sexual scenes. I don't have any children in my life, so I don't know what kids know and don't know at certain stages. But I think it's things like violence and, you know, things like sexual violence that, yeah, those are the things that we should be protecting kids from.
There's always that thing that comes out, isn't there? Like, I've heard this every time this kind of conversation happens, there's always this argument to be made of like, well, you can turn on the 6 o'clock news and you can see a lot of these things. You can see a report on somebody being stabbed, you can see a report on a robbery, and then it happens, you know. Emmerdale sensitively addressed this issue with a character, and that's the thing that gets complaints. But the news can be on half an hour earlier and report on it fine.
And have arguably more graphic and more explicit things. And again, they'll say beforehand, be warned, the scenes of a potentially upsetting nature coming up.
But I think if you're giving those warnings out beforehand, it's then parents' discretion whether they allow their children to watch those scenes.
I mean, that's what it boils down to, isn't it? Who decides who should be able to see what? You know, my parents let me watch certain things. You know, when I was 12, I was allowed to watch certain films that were classified 15 because my parents are just so lenient and hippie-ish like that. I was actually raised in a commune. But, you know, like certain things, they wouldn't want me to watch. Even, like, you know, even if after I was 12, there were certain things they wouldn't want me to watch that were 12. Like, I would never now, I'm 26 years old, and I would never watch The Exorcist because my mom has specifically asked me not to watch it because she finds it so terrifying and she doesn't want me to be scared by it. And
that.
So to this day...
It's really funny, The Exorcist.
Honestly, I am not watching that film.
I will never watch that film because I know that my mom will somehow find out. It could be 60 years' time, my mom will be long gone, and I will still never watch The Exorcist just because... I've been specifically told not to, and that's probably says more about me than
I wasn't allowed to watch anything. Like Footballers' Wives.
Oh my God, I wasn't allowed to watch football. I was. I kind of like broke down my parents. Same with Bad Girls.
I used to have to go and stay at my friend Jade's house, and her mom used to let us watch it.
Big up Jade's mom.
Jade's mom was
nice
the best.
I used to watch Footballers' Wives with my mom, which I think
of course
God,
you
why?
Did.
This podcast has started turning into like a group therapy session. I think that's something that explains quite a lot. But not The Exorcist. Never.
No.
I'm never watching that. I've not seen it. I don't
want
to.
Oh, it's great. It's really funny.
Well, Carol will be pleased to get you not watching
really
it anyway, mate.
It is.
DVD cover review there.
Yeah, I'm sure that's really what they were going for. Shall we move on?
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about Star Wars, because this week, the head of Lucasfilms, Kathleen Kennedy, revealed that there had been a behind-the-scenes discussion about whether to include a gay romance between Finn and Poe in Episode 8. So, certain quarters of the Star Wars fandom are kind of obsessed with this idea that Finn and Poe have got this like unspoken sexual tension, and there's a lot of like
Rachel being one
I
of them clearly.
So
there's a lot of fan fiction and there's a lot of, you know, fan art allegedly. I haven't seen any
of it.
And I certainly haven't created any of it, is what I was saying. But
I wonder what you were doing on clip art earlier.
Clip off.
Well, I had to get in my time machine to get there, but it was worth it once I got those lovely pictures. Moving swiftly on, so Kathleen Kennedy said that she was tempted to put this romance in to appease the fans. She said it's not going to happen in episode 8, but in sort of brackets, it could be episode 9, who knows. But what do we reckon in terms of, with big sagas like Star Wars, how much should producers be listening to fans and giving fans what they want? Is it caving or is it like giving the people who are paying the money something they actually
giving
want?
Giving the people what they want.
Yeah. What do we think?
Well, the one I thought of when we kind of talked about discussing this earlier is I cast my mind back to Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling saying that she actually, she put Hermione and Ron together at the end of all of the books and they're kind of married off and happy. And she later said that she only did that for the fans and she actually grew to regret the decision quite a lot.
See, I was really surprised to hear her say that because there was hints. I've read the first 6 Harry Potter books. Didn't bother with the 7th one because I didn't like all the stupid names.
All of that effort. And stuff.
Yeah. To be fair, it was effort over like 15 years. It wasn't like I read them all one off the back of the other and then thought, nah. When the 7th book came out, I just thought.
I thought book one was an effort, to be honest.
Did you finish?
I got up to halfway through book 3, and then I was like, you know what? I'm done.
So for you, given the fans what they want, would just be going, and they all lived happily ever after at the beginning of book 4, and that would be the end of it.
Or just maybe going like, you know what? There's no such thing as Harry Potter. That would be giving me what I want.
Oh my goodness. All right. Anyway, so we're talking about Hermione and Ron and J.K. Rowling saying she regretted it. So that's obviously a bad example. Has anyone got any good examples of when things have gone in the way that fans wanted and it's been a good thing?
Well, I think about this more in like a music way because I think it's different in terms of the difference between film and music in this way. So you see someone like Lady Gaga, when she released her last album Art Pop, there was quite a lot of talk among the kind of fan community about how they wanted her to return to kind of more mainstream kind of like songs, because Art Pop was quite an experimental album. And you know, like there was anticipation of what she would come back with. And in the end, she came back with an album called Joanne, which we don't like to talk about too much on this podcast.
I like talking about it because I like the hat.
But she ploughed on with what she wanted to do regardless. And I kind of think, well, look at where that's got you. It kind of, you've got a middle selling album, you've got singles that haven't reached the top 10, whereas if maybe you'd gone back to actually what the fans had called for and what the fans wanted, they're the ones buying your music at the end of the day.
I think you need a balance, don't you?
You do, because fans aren't experts, are they? Like at the end of the day, we all have things we'd like to happen, but then if they don't necessarily, you know, let's say a series, we want two characters to get together and they don't, but something good can come out of, you know, it's like life. It's like sometimes you don't get what you want, but then you get something even better. And that's why, you know, they're in charge and we're
even like
taking an inactive role.
I think you covered the story on the site, but Mark Hamill turned around and said that when he read the Star Wars script, it was absolutely not what he'd wanted and not what he'd envisioned.
Yeah.
And then he said, actually, when we got to the end and we'd done it, it was an amazing film. So if he can be surprised, then
there's also this argument. Let's say you're in the middle of something like the Harry Potter series or the Hunger Games series or something, and the fans all want something, and suddenly you just change what you were going to do and do what the fans say. There's this sense that you don't really know what you're talking about.
You're making it up as you're going along.
Yeah, which people are really quick to sniff out as well. I mean, something like The X Factor, you can see when they're mad scrambling. Actually, The X Factor is a really good example of one year they have arena auditions and the fans all complain on Twitter and the Sun runs a story about the fans complaining on Twitter. So the next year it's back to The Room and then The Mirror runs a story about fans complaining about The Room. So the next year it's Room and thingy. And then The Daily Mail does a story about fans. You know what I mean? And so you get this sense that these people behind the scenes are all running around like headless chickens and it makes the whole thing look like a farce. Whereas if you've got somebody sticking to their gut, you know, something like The Voice, fair enough, about 10 people
has
it
got it. Fans?
Well, Rachel and her mama fans. You're going to say that at Shirley's face? Because I'm not. You know, fair enough, they haven't got a massive fan base, but at least they stuck to their guns and there wasn't a sense of like, oh, what we're going to do, you know.
Throwing their hands up in the air and going, what the hell do we do?
Yeah, at least it seemed like they had some sort of capability and some sort of competence.
I think, Rachel, you're probably the expert on this and can probably sort of pad out what I'm about to say. But I think a good example of where they've really listened to what fans want is Rob Ron in Emmerdale. Like, fans really want to see them together. They really want to see them happy. And yes, they've had their curveballs thrown at them throughout their time. But ultimately, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, they're quite committed to making them work as a couple.
Yeah, so basically, they've turned around and said, so, like, Rob Ron fans are, like, next level. Like, anytime you tweet anything about them, anytime we do a story on them, like, they just go mad for it. Like, people absolutely adore them. And they're
Sorry, who are Rob Ron fans? So, are they like teenagers or
are
they young people?
No, it's quite a young
audience.
So it's teenagers
audience. Watching this gay couple on Emmerdale.
I guess it must be like Larry Stylinson's ship.
It pretty much kind of is.
But for reals this time.
Yeah, it's also amazing because Emmerdale's audience, like they'll be the first ones to admit it, isn't traditionally that kind of Hollyoaks audience.
No.
And they're kind of pulling them in. But yeah, so they got married in February, Rob Ron. And they have had their ups and downs, but for the most part, I think because every time something kind of hits them that's not that great, so we've seen Robert cheat on his husband, and we've seen all sorts of things like that. And that every
baby in the mix,
baby, every single time they're forced to come out and say, like, guys, don't worry, we're not going to mess this up.
See, I think that's good that they come out and do that and say, look, just keep watching. We're sticking with it.
They literally do issue statements on it, don't
they? They've been forced to, like, so many times. People go, like...
One of those scriptwriters had to pull their Twitter account because they were getting so much hate.
But the other thing is, like, so... Just call him Ian now, because we're apparently really good friends.
A.K.A. can't pronounce his surname.
No comment. he has come out and said as well, like, at a press event, he told the Huffington Post UK, that the problem with it is they are a soap couple, so they're not going to just live happily ever after. So he's kind of... He is giving fans what he wants, but at the same time, it's that balance. He's sticking to his guns. You know, they're not going to have this, like, easy life and they're just going to sit in the village and retire because that would be boring. Like, he has got plans for them.
Well, fingers crossed for this gay romance in Star Wars 9 anyway, because...
We'll start that petition.
I'm ready. Well, that petition's up and rolling. Let's get into it.
Do you want CP3O? What's his name?
C-3PO and R2-D2.
Yeah.
That's the real Star Wars romance. Don't even get me started on that, because that's a whole other podcast.
We could do a special when spin-off. The film comes out.
I've already written my R2-D2 fan fiction. It's called C-3PO, A Robot Love Story. Moving on.
Why?
you think I'm kidding? I'll share the Google Doc with you. Before we go on, I sent a tweet out shortly before we started recording about a word that I didn't know how to pronounce that we're now going to be pronouncing a lot because I didn't want to look like a dick. The matter at hand is whether it's pronounced biopic or biopic. I've since discovered that Viola Davis pronounces it biopic. So if you're listening and you don't think it's biopic, take it up with Viola Davis. I dare you. The reason we're talking about biopics is because it's been announced as a biopic coming out about Madonna. My favourite person in the whole world. So I'm very excited about
it. That was me, Daniel.
Sorry, favourite... I was going to say pop diva, but you're my favourite pop diva as well. All right, favourite person who isn't in this room in the world. I'm very excited about it. She's less excited. She says that only she has the right to tell her story. And she's called the producers charlatans and fools. And I don't think it's just because one of them is Michael DeLuca, the man behind 50 Shades of Grey and 50 Shades Darker. The question is, does she have a point, and how much can you kick off when someone wants to make a film of your life story that you're not on board with?
Before we came in to do this, I was kind of thinking, oh, you know what, she needs to just stop complaining. But actually, thinking about it from the other point of view, if someone was making a film about my life and was like decided that they were just going to do what they wanted, I'd be like, do you want to not?
Yeah. I would definitely have some complaints if someone was making a film of your life, but that's that's another story.
I would be so pissed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that especially Madonna, it's not like she's somebody who's not in the spotlight. It's not like she's somebody who's in her 90s and is, you know, in a retirement village living out the last of her days. Like, she's still very active in the music scene. I know that I'm quite biased saying that as a Madonna fan, but, you know, she's still around. And so, you know, you still read stories about her, you know, at least once a week, I would say.
I think biopics probably more so than, say, documentaries, but biopics can often be quite cheap in a kind of way. I don't mean sort of in their production values and kind of like that, but it's just a cheap way of exploiting a celebrity.
Oh, I think they're cheap in production values.
Sometimes they are.
Well, I mean, if you watch a Lifetime movie that's a biopic, and those are some fabulous hangover viewing. Sorry, Rachel, what were you going to say?
Well, the one I just thought about is, it's not really a biopic, but you had the one of my favourite shows on television, The People versus OJ Simpson. Mm-hmm. And obviously OJ is in prison. He's not in a position to give his permission for that to be turned into a drama, but you had Kris Jenner, whose husband Robert was obviously one of the, like, on the legal team for OJ, she was kind of consulted, and they, like, you know, they had her on board, and she kind of helped advise them and stuff. And I think that...
Did she?
Yeah.
I didn't
Robert,
know that.
Robert, what's his name? David Schwimmer, who played Robert Kardashian, had a phone call with her.
Oh my God, what yeah. I would give for a phone call with Kris
Jenner. Can you imagine?
Let me tell you, I wouldn't get any work done, but anyway. Sorry.
But the thing is, it, like, not only should you have them on board, but it pays to have them on board. Like, yeah. It did them no harm that Kris Jenner kind of...
You get that extra level of insight, don't you, I guess?
Yeah, like, and also she was around in the news, you know, she was giving interviews and telling people, like, you know, I help with this, I'm really pleased with it. Like, it's not doing them any favours that Madonna's come out and completely slagged it off.
At she the did first get... stage as well, at the first stage. It's not like she's got waited halfway through and gone, actually, I don't like the way this is going. She said from the beginning she's not happy with it.
But then she did fall at the first hurdle.
Oh, she did. So I don't know if you saw this, but she tweeted a picture of a page of the script and was like, look at this, it's full of lies. I wasn't born here and I didn't do this. And then someone found a video clip of her saying that she was born there and she did do this, even though it wasn't true. So she's the one who lied in the first place, and that's where they got the quote from. And that's the other thing with a biopic, is that they're going to find out everything that you've been a bit, that you've told white lies about.
I mean, maybe it hints at why she's not quite pleased with it. This well, that's is kind of...
The thing is, she like shot to fame in the early 80s, and that was a time when you could say certain things and people weren't going to fact check them on, you know, you can't immediately go on Google and find out who she went to school with and whatever. So if she's going to bejewel the elephant a bit and, you know, make herself a little bit...
Good phrase. Yeah. I've never heard that before.
What's he called? Armistead Maupin?
How does Viola Davis pronounce this?
I'll do a Twitter poll after this. You know who I mean? Anyway, yeah, if you want to sort of make things a little bit more jazzy.
Roll the turd in glitter is another phrase I've heard.
I just that one.
I don't think her life was a turd. I just think it needed a little bit of glitter, but it wasn't a full-on turd. I'm sorry that I've had to say the word turd on the podcast as well.
I'm feeling really upset.
I feel like I'm dirty things. I want to talk to you as well about, like, documentaries about celebrities as well. So obviously the Amy Winehouse documentary did not get the approval of her family, even though it did at
well,
first.
Well, it did at first,
yes, that's
didn't
it?
It? I mean, it was mainly a reflection on him that he didn't agree with that one in the end, and it didn't stop it from being successful. But the other one that's coming out next week is the Heath Ledger one.
Oh.
So I don't know if you've seen this, it's called I Am Heath Ledger, and it's lots of, like, personal footage that he made of himself, and it kind of talks about his death and the run-up to it. And that has been made with the permission of his family. But it's a slightly different one, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah. Well, it's like Russell Brand did that documentary that followed him around for like 7 years, and he was so on board with it until he looked at it and was like, oh, actually, whoopsie, I'm going to distance myself from this now.
I guess we all have the right to, like, self-edit ourselves. You know, if you write, say, an autobiography, you've got that, like, luxury of, like, editing it. Like, you can sit there and go, actually, I don't want to put that bit in, I can take that bit out. Well, I don't know. It depends if you're making it with your own production team and stuff, but you could lose that sort of right over.
Well, you're handing it over, aren't
you? Exactly.
Like, if you're not a documentary maker, you've presumably got someone else in. And the Amy Winehouse one, I can't remember the guy's name, but he'd already won an Oscar for the Senna one. He was, like, this kind of renowned guy. So Mitch Winehouse knew that he was handing his daughter's story over to somebody else, and he knew he should have known what could have come out of it. Obviously, he didn't.
Still a good documentary, though, right?
Amazing.
It's amazing. I literally bawled my eyes out.
Before we go, I want to end on a quiz, as always. This week marks a very special anniversary in British music because it's 20 years since we last won Eurovision, everybody.
Wow.
This
20
week,
years?
20 years.
Was that Katrina and the Waves?
It was Katrina and the Waves, Love Shine a Light. Last time I heard that song, I was off my face at the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, but that is another story all together. So in the past 20 years, we've come quite close to winning, and other times we have not.
When have we come close?
Well, you're about to find out, Ashley, in another fabulous game of Higher or Lower. So I'm going to throw some UK Eurovision entries from the past 20 years at you, and I want you to tell me whether they were higher or lower than the one before them. So we're going to start with Daz Sampson. He did Teenage Life. Remember, he was the one who went up against...
It was the Katie Price year.
It was the Katie Price year. And I think, was that also the Rita Ora year? Or was that a little bit later?
Oh, the one that she pulled out of?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember.
Actually, it can't be because she would have been too young.
I think they auditioned for their Rita Ora year, whereas I think the Katie Price year, they were pre-selected. That's my memory of it anyway.
Should have been Katie Price, just saying. So Daz Sampson got to number 19 in the scoreboard.
In the ranking, right, okay.
In the ranking. Right, so Rachel, since you won last week, I'm going to come to you first.
Okay.
So Daz Sampson was number 19. How did Andy the Bin Man do? Was he higher or lower with his song, Even If? That's Andy the Bin Man Abraham.
See, I have such a bad memory, but I feel like maybe he was lower. I don't think he was one of the good ones.
I can confirm he was lower. Yeah. He was 25th.
I knew he was second from bottom. I can remember that.
See, I can't remember things like this.
Oh, Andy.
All right, so that's well done, Rachel. Ash, coming to you next. So Andy was at 25th. How did Nicki French do in the year 2000? Nicki French, with her song Don't Play That Song, you can see her performing at regional gay bars around the United Kingdom every day of the week.
Can I just ask for clarification? Is there an option of same level?
No, there is not.
Okay, so it's either literally higher or lower.
Yes.
Well, she didn't get Neil Poir because our only Neil Poir is Gemini. So I'm going to go higher.
That is correct. She was 16th with 28 points. Rachel, coming back to you.
Okay.
Javine, Touch My Fire.
Touch My Fire.
Javine. I don't know this one, so I'm just going to say hopefully that it was higher.
It was actually lower.
Oh,
she came 22nd with 18 points. And I don't think any of those points were from Alicia Dixon. And we all, or for that matter, Jamelia. Because we all know how Jamelia feels about her, don't we?
Do we?
Yeah, have you not seen that on Buzzcocks?
No.
Oh, Ash, we'll have a watch of that later on.
Oh, hello.
Oh, it's a treat. Throwback. All right. Ash, Jade Ewan, higher or lower than Javine?
I actually know. Higher. And yeah. She was 5th place.
That's right. Oh, my God. Well done.
Thanks.
Yeah, Jade Ewan, It's My Time.
Written by Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Written by Lord Lloyd Webber. Yeah, 5th place. Not bad. And also, you can hear really cheaply made remixes of that in residential gay bars around the country. A recurring theme in the Eurovision quiz. Who'd have thought it? Rachel, you're behind 1 point. So Jade Ewan was 5th. How did Jessica Garlick do? Higher or lower?
I feel like lower.
Surprisingly, she was actually higher. Jessica Garlick was 3rd place.
Oh my God.
With her song Come Back. That was the year 2002. What a year it was, eh?
God, that was...
2002.
She was pop idol, wasn't she?
She was, and then she was on Buzzcocks, not to mention Buzzcocks again, with Amy Winehouse, remember?
Wow.
I spent a lot of time watching Buzzcocks on YouTube. Ash, Electro Velvet, 2015. Higher or lower than 3rd place?
I think we all know how this ended, don't we? Lower, much lower.
We were 24th of 27, and that is... I think...
Generous, that's, to be fair.
Not just the worst Eurovision entry, but I think one of the worst songs I've ever
that
heard.
That song brings me so much joy. It's so bad that it's one of the greatest things on YouTube.
I honestly don't get any joy out of watching it. I just feel despair. I just feel despair for mankind. I know exactly what you're going to say, Rachel.
It's when that scatting kicks
in. It's when he goes, skibbly bap, bap, bap. Oh, my God. So horrible. But it's awful. And anyway, I can't talk about it anymore. Again, this is another separate podcast. Rachel, Blue compared to Electro Velvet, how did they do?
Higher.
That is correct.
Oh, can I guess the position? Yes. I just like doing this for my own game.
For your own game.
4th.
They were 11th.
Oh, really? Oh, no, Jedward were 4th to their 11th.
Because Jed would have done it twice, didn't they?
That was the first year Jed did it.
Both times with Absolute Tunes as well.
That Lipstick, such a good song.
Absolutely amazing. I mean, Ash, you have actually already won this, but let's do it anyway. Scooch, higher or lower than Blue?
The song was Flying the Flag.
Yes, it was.
And Terry Wogan, when they won Eurovision Making Their Mind Up, famously announced that Cindy had won rather than Scooch.
Much missed.
But I'm going to go lower.
Cindy.
Where's Cindy now? Where is Scooch now, for that matter?
I'll tell you where Scooch... Well, actually, I'll tell you after this, because we're already about 5 minutes over. But I'll tell you later where Scooch are. What was your answer, sorry?
It was lower.
It was lower. That is correct. They were 22nd, which I think is a bit of a shame, because that song is cracking. And you can hear it in residential gay bars around the country all year round. Don't know about you, but I'm off to a residential gay bar right now. So we'll be back next week. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and tell your mates to listen to Into It. Later!